This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast.
The Hidden Killers Podcast.
With Tony Bruschi.
Defense Attorney Kaylee Curran joining us right now. Obviously, Lori Daybell's trial getting underway today. But I want to talk about how we got here, how we got to our final set of jurors and alternates. Because on Friday of last week, it was narrowed down to 42. And then the attorneys, defense, and prosecution narrowed it down from there to our final set of jurors. Kaylee, you obviously have experience in this world being a defense attorney. Can you walk us through how that final process went once they had their larger pool and then how they got basically down to that final group that's going to be deciding the fate of Lori Vallow Daybell?
Right. So that's interesting. It's in process, obviously, we call voir dire. Each judge actually has their own set of rules. There's not a set thing. So for example, one judge may be like, you can only ask questions to potential jurors that is related to the case. Other judges are like, have at it. You can ask what clubs they're a part of, what church they go to. So it's all a judge perspective. But essentially, we all know what a jury box is. Here, we're usually only allowed to strike people in the jury box. So 1 through 12, we can strike for the first round. And then, so overall, we're talking to 24 people at one time. So usually not the 42, because it's hard to keep track of 42 people.
Sure.
So out of that 24, we're only allowed to strike the first 12 that are in the so-called box. And then out of the 13 to 24, they move into those spots. And then you can ask those people questions as well, strike those people and move forward. Some judges prefer that we exchanged papers and everything, prefer that you only do one strike per round, which means that you can only strike one juror per round. So you and the DA exchange papers, it goes up to the judge and the judge reads off who it is. So you don't know if it's the prosecution or the defense that's striking them to eliminate any bias. Some judges are like, hey, you can strike five at one time in the first round. I don't care. So it's usually judge preference and everything, how that goes. In this type of case, the big thing and we're seeing problems out of is somebody who hasn't really heard it and come to an opinion on this case. That's going to be the biggest thing to weed out. And as a defense attorney, you want the judge to eliminate as many people as you want for cause, because that saves your strike for something, for example, somebody saying that, cops can never be liars and things like that. You know, a defense attorney may be like, ooh, this case, you know, involves me saying that a cop is lying. You know, I want to eliminate them. It can't be for cause. So you want to keep that in your back pocket, all your strikes. So you want the judge to eliminate them as much as possible. And if they're telling the judge, hey, I've come to my opinion and nothing you say, nothing they say is going to make me change my mind. I am dead set in stone. Nothing's going to happen. I already know what my answer is going to be. Then the judge can decide to strike them and it won't be part of your challenges.
So in the case here, we've been hearing about the dismissal from the judge of some people that have questioned, you know, how strange it was that Lori went to Hawaii and that obviously she knows something, that person obviously gone. Another one saying, yeah, I've watched some stuff here and there, but really, you know, I don't really follow it much. They're still in the pool, if you will. If you were the defense attorney for Lori Vallow Daybell, who would you be trying to now get off the jury, get rid of in this this next process when they try to whittle it down to the final few?
So it's really hard without knowing their answers to all the other questions, because the way we structure is all our questions kind of lead into it. So you start off with the, you know, easy ones to get the jurors to loosen up a bit, feel more comfortable, because you don't want to all of a sudden first question you ask them and be like, what's your feeling about the death penalty kind of thing. You want to loosen them up a bit, get them to open up. And, you know, I think the biggest thing here is going to be, one, are you going to hold it against the client, whether they testify or not? Two, if you are the sole person out of everybody, so say, for example, all 11 other people want to vote guilty, but you are dead set on not guilty, will your opinion be swayed so you can go home? That is the biggest thing. We've had problems with jurors be like, you know what? I'm the only person here. It's 9 o'clock at night. Screw it. They're guilty. You know, that kind of thing. So you want to make sure people are going to be dead set and not be swayed by everybody else. So I think that's going to be the biggest thing here.
In a case like this, you know, obviously, can we completely get down to everyone not being in a swayable position? Is it just kind of, let's make the best of what we have here? Because obviously some are very likely going to have some knowledge of the case. And it's not that a juror doesn't have to not have knowledge, but it's a matter of how much they have. Is there ever negotiating? Is there with defense versus prosecution on who should be staying and who should be going? Or is this all completely done kind of like in a vacuum on each side?
I mean, you know, there is some, it depends on your relationship with the prosecutor. Mm-hmm. Some prosecutors can be very shady, saying, you know, I've had one where he was like, I'm going to strike it. Don't strike this person. Don't worry. And then I get the sheet back and he's not striking them. And I'm like, okay, I see how we're going here. We're okay. Going to go full hardcore. And then I've had others where it's like, hey, you know, I know this person. She's not allowed to say this, but she's my chiropractor because they're under HIPAA.
Yeah.
So kind of like, we got to eliminate her kind of thing.
Sure.
So, I mean, you know, it just depends on the relationship. And obviously the defense attorneys will know to kind of weed that out. But, you know, everybody here in the board IR says you really hold your cards close to the vest because you don't want to lose your strikes and stuff. And you don't want to be overly confident in your relationship with the DA and have somebody on your jury that you're like, oh man, they really needed to get out. And I lost it. I don't have any more strikes.
Sure. When we get to opening statements, opening arguments coming up on Monday, it's now been set by the judge for 8:30 a.m. Mm-hmm. local time. What do you foresee? Well, just in your opinion, what would you expect to the initial arguments be from the defense of Lori Vallow-Daybell?
Well, I would hope that they just lead a story. So a lot of our loose ends that we see, like why she went to Hawaii and all this other stuff, he's saying, hey, this is what actually has happened. This is what we're going to show you happen. So I'm hoping we're actually going to get a preview of their strategy and what her thought process was during the whole thing, because that's going to keep a lot of jurors up at night. Like, why are you in Hawaii? I need to know. That is my biggest thing here.
And with something like that, with those questions that are going to come up, I'm dying to know the answers. I'm sure you are too, as to how they're going to be answering yes. those sort of situations, because it none of it mm-hmm. seems to make very much sense. Another question that I've been asking, because there's the possibility that we could see Chad flip here and come out and actually testify against Lori. We don't have any evidence that that's going to happen, but in theory, that could be something that could happen for him. If that were to happen, my biggest concern would not be so much the drama that would create and the damning information that would come out, but more so the mental state of Lori Vallow-Daybell being able to continue in this case, being able to be competent to continue to stand trial, or would that break her to the point of not being able to participate in her own defense? I'm curious to your thoughts on if this woman is going to be able to make it through what's anticipated to possibly be a 6 to 10 week trial with a lot of information coming out that, you know, may not be something she wants to hear or can process in a logical way.
Right. So she's already been deemed competent, so she can stand trial no matter what. Her emotional state, you know, the defense may have to ask the judge for, you know, a couple hour break or something, but just her being emotional through it, I cannot see that, you know, being a mistrial or, you know, the judge just completely stopping it. It's more like the defense attorneys have client control there. Like, you know, this is going to suck. You need to get over it. Think of, you know, a happy place, you know, some nice little thought. Pick a point in the courtroom and just stare at it. Uh-huh. You know, you got to control it because every emotion, the juror just watches your client. And so some of defense attorneys like that, they tell their client, you know, just look sad at these parts. You know, they're going to be watching and they have them closest to the jury. Other defense attorneys kind of block the defendant from the jurors because they know the jurors are just going to be staring. So I think the defense attorneys here are going to prepare her properly. I don't think she's going to be declared incompetent. With regards to him testifying, unless they have put him on the witness list, I don't see a surprise like, hey, you know, now all of a sudden he's going to be testifying. So there has to be proper notice. And the prosecutors here have already messed up a little bit, which we saw that, you know, death penalty is off the table because of that. We talked about that last time. So I think they're on eggshells here with this judge that they're not going to try and pull any shady moves like that.
If he's not on the witness list going in, can he be added later if there were to be some sort of deal struck or confession made in the middle of this trial?
Yes. So if she testifies or if the defense puts up witnesses and he can properly rebut them, it's going to be in the rebuttal. So you have the state's proof, you have the defense, and the state has an opportunity for rebuttal after that. So that could possibly happen. Yes.
You're listening to the Hidden Killers podcast.
Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
Kaylee Turin, defense attorney, thank you so much for coming on and giving us insight into that. Of course, we're watching the trial for you very closely, bringing you expert insight into the case, on the ground coverage, and courtroom audio as we get it from the courts. We play it back for you right here. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of it. My name is Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.